The other thing that they have in this loan program related to reduction of the forgiveness amount is on the wages portion. So not only are you required, or at least hopefully will, maintain the same employee count that you had in 2019, it's the wage level also needs to be near the same amount. If you happen to reduce wages over the 8-week period, and the 8-week period is the time from when you get the loan until those 8 weeks are up, so it's about 2 months. If you reduce employee wages by more than 25%, that delta, the difference 25% and above, is also going to be pro rata deducted from the ability to forgive a portion of the debt. It's going to be a complicated formula, I think, as we get a little further down the line and how that's actually going to work. We don't have a lot of guidance on how they're actually going to interpret that. But what we have been able to figure out and what we believe is going to happen is during your 8 weeks, if you spend all of the money that you have, that you have received on those required uses, payroll, rent, utilities, likely you're going to be okay. They will look at your employee level, and so you want to get that as close as you possibly can to that same number to maintain that number. And that's where we may see a little bit. It's just easier to calculate on what that reduction is going to be on a per employee basis. The problem is going to arise, and the discussions are going to happen when we have a reduction in wages. Our suggestion to everybody is, if you take advantage of this program, maintain wages as much as you can, or if you do, make sure you track it and make sure you don't do a reduction of wages any more than 25% to any employee from what that position, again, not that employee, but that position was earning in the year prior. Like I said, that will be complicated. There'll be a little lot more discussion as it fleshes out and how that's going to happen. Personally, from my perspective, I don't think that is going to be a huge ordeal, only because the money is relatively inexpensive. And so I think there'll be plenty of ways for us to help borrowers, and not us particularly, but anyone, any borrower, to go in and discuss with your lender, show them the documentation that you need to show that while you may have reduced one employee's salary by 28%, you increased another position, your total payroll obligations did not decrease by 25% year over year, and it's gonna be hard to peg that to an individual employee, so you are compliant globally with that. Again, that's just an argument that we're talking about, and it hasn't been fleshed out, but I think ultimately that's where it's going to land. And I know that's confusing, especially on this part, and a little wishy-washy on what it is. We just don't have the guidance on that. But I think best practices, if you can keep every employee that you have or every position, if you rehire or can normalize their salaries and make sure you hit that 75% level of what they were making in 2019, you'll be clear under the forgiveness portion of this act, and you'll be able to receive 100% loan forgiveness for that amount. The other benefit that comes from these loans that are not typical with what we see in the loans are the application process. Like I said, it's fairly easy, fairly straightforward. There is not a lot of credit check or credit history that's going to happen. And in fact, really, it's going to be based on just self-disclosure of you promise to use these funds for what they're intended. Here is your average monthly payroll cost. Here's the number of jobs that you had in 2019 on a monthly basis. And you're going to use the purpose of the loan for payroll, mortgage, rent, utilities. There will not be a personal guarantee. There will not be any collateral pledged. So it really is, you know, a walk-in, submit your documentation, let the lender review that, and you'll be able to then get that money without having a huge impact on what's happening. The only disclosure that we have seen and that is going to be required to happen is any principal owner that owns more than 25% of the ownership in any given enterprise is going to need to submit a separate disclosure, their EIN number, and there may be a credit check based on that individual. How that applies to nonprofits, they have not given us any guidance on, and it appears that likely will not occur. Some of the lenders may ask for something based on either the president or whoever's controlling the board of the nonprofits. But as of today, we don't see any requirement that the nonprofit is going to have to submit that kind of documentation. So A couple other aspects of this loan, and hopefully, you know, you're thinking of some questions, and after we talk about the other one, we'll come back and answer more of these questions. But remember, a key part of this debt also is that there is an automatic 6-month deferment for the loan period. What that means is once you get the loan, you will have 6 months from that funding date where there will be no payments due. Interest will accrue during that period. The 2 years starts from the date that you actually receive funds, but the first 6 months of that 2-year period, there will be no payments due. And again, the intent there is if these proceeds are used accordingly and how they're supposed to use, there will be no debt due at the end of 8 weeks plus 60 days. So about 4 months when you get it forgiven, there will be nothing there, and that should fill into the 6-month deferment period. And again, interest does accrue at the time that the loan is made. So there will be some interest if it extends past and you have a balance due on the note that is not forgiven, your interest will actually be accruing from the date it happened. Again, at 0.5% interest, it should not be a big barrier for you, but just keep in mind that actually occurs. And then one other question we have that I'll address now is on accommodation of employee loss that was due to a resignation that was unrelated to COVID-19 is one of the questions that we've received. So the intent of this is always going to be that it's COVID-19 related, and you do need to make an attestation that you require these funds in part because of the economic uncertainty related to the current ongoing environment. COVID-19 is not specifically stated, but that was the intent there. So if you had employees that left for reasons other than a loss related to COVID-19, either a voluntary reduction in employment by them, given the circumstances, or that you had to lay off, it really is not going to be applicable or matter. It's going to be your total employee count for 2019 for that average monthly count, whatever it is. So if you have somebody that left unrelated to the current pandemic, that number is still going to account. So to receive forgiveness, you will need to be able to bring somebody back to fill that slot to do that, but you should be able to receive the money. The pro and the con from that is your loan calculation is going to be based on that employee when they were part of your payroll costs in 2019. So you will get some funding to hopefully take care of that position. And as we go on and explain and we get to a little more questions, we can talk a little bit about that. You may need to get creative on some of this. You may have employees that you let go, laid off, furloughed, that have no desire to come back. And so you're going to go need to find some way to fill those slots. Again, keep in mind though, if you don't, and the forgivable portion of the debt is not forgiven because you did not hire back 5 people, I know you don't want to carry debt, but you will carry a little bit of debt. But again, it's fairly inexpensive debt money. So if that's the worst case scenario, I think we're probably okay. But that is one program. And that's the program, again, I think most questions are going to come from that as we get to the next phase of this webinar. So think of some questions. Feel free to shoot them over to Javis and he can read those out. But in the meantime, there is another program that we have, the Economic Disaster Loan, that may be a slightly better fit for you. Like I said, it's a little more longer than the 8-week short-term PPP program. It is a little bit more expansive and has a little more nuance to it. And so I'm going to turn the time over to Rachel to talk about that program and some of the other benefits that are there.
Great. Thank you, Torben. As Torben mentioned, the other loan that is being addressed in the CARES Act is economic injury disaster loans, which is an existing program with the SBA. With now under CARES, an additional $10 billion appropriated for use to respond to COVID-19. So what this does is it overlaps a bit with the Payment Protection Program in terms of what the terms are, but there are some pretty big differences between the two programs. The maximum loan amount is up to $2 million under this, and it's designed to have a much longer loan term than the PPP program, up to, I believe, 30 years. So it's a much longer term loan you're dealing with. Like PPP, it also has very low interest, but it is a bit higher. I believe it's going to be 3.75% for for-profit businesses and 2.75% for nonprofit businesses. So You know, not as low as the PPP, but it is relatively inexpensive money. It's designed to be used for working capital, sick leave, payroll, increased costs, rent, mortgage, and then kind of just generally repaying obligations that can't be met due to revenue loss. The application is currently live if you go to covid19relief.sba.gov, which I'll repeat at the end of this. The application is there and you can take a quick look through and see, you know, what requirements they have for that. Kind of like the PPP program as well, they are waiving a number of the general requirements for obtaining funding with the, you know, design to get money in people's hands much quicker. They're waiving personal guarantees for loans up to $200,000. So to the extent the loan is more than that, they will be requiring a personal guarantee. They're also waiving the requirement that the applicant prove that they can't obtain credit elsewhere, which is a major change. Typically for these disaster loans, the applicant needs to show that they've, you know, tried to obtain funding elsewhere and have been unable to. So again, designed to get money in people's hands a lot quicker. Much like the PPP program as well, it is open to small businesses with under 500 employees, including private nonprofit organizations. One of the questions we're getting a lot when Torben and I do these talks is kind of how the PPP and the disaster loans work together. There's a lot of confusion over whether it's mutually exclusive, you have to choose one or the other, or you can get both. The answer is a yes, but you can get both loans, but there's no double dipping. So basically the guidance is, you can get both loans and, you know, take advantage of both loan programs, but you can't get two different loans to the same purpose. So to the extent you get a PPP loan to cover your payroll costs, you can't seek a disaster loan to cover the same purpose. So as long as the funds are, you know, kept separate, not commingled and used for different purposes, there's no problem with obtaining both, and there's no problem with obtaining both at different times, just depending on what your business needs are. The big thing that CARES created under this is a loan advance of up to $10,000 that is distributed to the applicant within 3 days, you know, subject to the SBA taking a look at eligibility. So this means, you know, to the extent it really is, you know, a crisis point, you can get up to $10,000 very quickly. What we believe they're going to be looking at is credit score. We don't really have any guidance as to what's going to be an acceptable credit score at this point,